Hey guys, welcome back to the Play Like a Girl podcast, one of the shows for SB Nation's Ohio State site, Land Grant Holy Land. We're two girls talking about sports because our opinion counts too. I'm your host, Meredith Hine, and I'm so excited to be joined by my co-host, Kelsey Trainer.
Hello, hello. We're kicking things off today with a recap of the French Open. So Meredith, take it away.
So we seem to have a theme for this week, and that theme is that tennis is pretentious. Not tennis the sport. Tennis the sport is very fun, but it seems that the governing bodies of tennis are just the worst. You may recall we spent about an hour on our last show talking about Naomi Osaka. A lot more has happened since then, including an exciting conclusion to the tournament itself. So we did want to jump back into that. But good news first. I apologize in advance for butchering this name, but Barbara Krejcová, and I'm so sorry because I certainly butchered that name, won the women's singles and doubles titles last week, which is a rare sweep at the French Open and the first at Roland Garros since 2000. She also joins the esteemed company of the GOAT herself, Serena Williams, who took both the singles and the women's doubles titles at Wimbledon in 2016. The singles win was Barbara's first ever Grand Slam singles win and propelled her to a career-high singles ranking, and she's now sitting at 15th internationally. So congrats to Barbara. What an accomplishment. And what a great way to end what had been honestly a drama-filled tournament for what had happened off the court.
Honestly, I mean, seriously, like insane congratulations to her. I can't even imagine winning one. It's such a feat in and of itself. And then to just be on that high and riding that into a doubles win as well. That's just got to be insane. And I'm sure the paycheck is nice too. So I definitely love that for her. And yeah, the tournament itself was just an absolute mess. I know we spent a lot of time on the last episode talking about it. And something that did happen that we didn't get a chance to talk about was that Roger Federer withdrew due to injury. And surprise, surprise, no one got mad about it. You know, we talked in depth about how everyone got mad at Naomi Osaka for withdrawing for mental health reasons. But you know, Roger Federer due to physical health reasons withdrew, and everyone was like, great, good for him.
Hope he gets better. It was really upsetting. And again, it's not Roger Federer's fault. I sincerely do hope that he gets better. But the response literally from the same human who critiqued Osaka for leaving for mental health reasons is praising Roger Federer and says that he, you know, hopes for a speedy recovery. And he respects the decision to withdraw.
Imagine if athletes' decisions were just respected based off of all of their health and not just their physical health. Yeah, I mean, they completely played themselves and they showed themselves throughout this entire tournament. Like our theme of the day of tennis being just entirely pretentious. I don't understand how you treat Naomi Osaka. You know, you're probably one of your best players in the world on the women's side one way. And then you treat Roger Federer, you know, one of the all-time greats on the men's side, a different way. The double standard is just insane. And then I did see that, you know, we have noted here that Andy Murray said that he thought that both sides could have handled Osaka's withdrawal better. And it's maybe I'm just totally missing something, but what did Naomi do wrong? Like, what could she have handled better other than being very honest, being very open about what she was feeling, which she didn't have to be, and then doing what was best for her. I don't understand what she could have done better. She can't make her mental health better, you know, just with a snap of a finger. I'm lost on that.
Yeah. And Murray's statement was to the effect of, you know, he rightly called out the organizers in the Grand Slam for their role. But then he also said that basically, Naomi's like communications team should have figured a better way to state this and should have been able to work with the tournament to basically find a way around it. And I'm like, hey, we saw what the tournament's response was when she said this.
Right. Maybe the tournament's communications people should be better when their response after she said this was that, you know, Serena and other people understood the assignment and, you know, that Naomi didn't, like with their social media jab. You know, that's just absolutely the you know, a pot calling a kettle, and the hypocrisy of it all is just insane.
Yeah. And speaking of failures of the French Open's communications team, tennis. So this is tying in a few different themes, but when Novak Djokovic won the men's title earlier this week, he gave his racket to a fan in the crowd. It was a beautiful moment. It was very cool. It went viral. And then the tournament organizers took the video down because they said it violated television rights. And tennis fans, like real tennis fans, are in a rage because they're like, this was such a gorgeous moment and you're just falling back on like television rights and ruining this great moment when, you know, we see things like this all the time. And maybe you can speak to it from like a lawyer's perspective and tell me like if it really is that big of a deal, but like how can tennis just not get behind like these good moments and be like, oh, this was adorable. Everyone can get behind this, but us basically.
Yeah. I mean, like legally they want to control their intellectual property. So, you know, so they own that video, they own the rights to it. And, you know, they obviously have contracted out with networks or platforms to display those rights. So like, yeah, technically they're correct, but there's always caveats, right? And there's always promotional inserts. And there's so many ways that, you know, you're allowed to share clips on social media, right? That's promotional. That's advertising. And not only that, but like the technicality of like, okay, yeah, maybe you own it, but you're quite literally just, you know, shooting yourself in the foot by doing that. Like you're missing out on this great public moment that people can watch and view and bring, you know, some good to your tournament because, you know, quite frankly, it's been riddled with a mess over the past few weeks. So yeah, it was a really, I think it was a wrong attempt to try to control their intellectual property. And you know, it's a business decision they made, and it's not, definitely not one that I agree with, nor I'm gathering a large amount of tennis fans agree with as well.
Yeah. Let's just chalk it up to the French Open has a lot of opportunity to improve heading into next year.
So positive. I love it.
Ugh. Right. Well, anyway, tennis is certainly not over. We've got the U.S. Open coming up here in just a couple months. But before that, we have the Olympics. Kelsey, we are so close.
So close.
We're going to do an Olympic-specific show here in the next few weeks because it is obviously the one time every 4 years when we get super into these obscure sports that we know nothing about but cheer with all of our hearts, and it is just so wonderful. We do have a couple Olympic stories coming up after the break, so stay with us. Welcome back. As I mentioned before the break, the Olympics are nearly upon us, which means thousands of hopefuls are trying for their last opportunities to fill coveted spots on teams around the world. One of those hopefuls was Shelby Houlihan, who had entered notoriety as a middle distance runner and who now holds 2 U.S. records. Unfortunately for Houlihan, the 28-year-old runner tested positive for a performance-enhancing drug recently, which means a 4-year ban, which means missing out not only on the Tokyo Olympics, but also in the Paris 2024 Olympics, because COVID has really just destroyed all aspects of time. According to Houlihan, the positive test was the result of a burrito she ate the morning of the test, which contained pork offal, which, and I'm not a scientist, can apparently cause a positive test result. I'm going to say I have not a personal connection to the story, but Shelby is from Iowa, and I have a couple friends who are runners in Iowa and who I actually learned about this story first from them and hearing it from their perspective. And it is it's wild when you read her take on what the story is and what happened. But, you know, want to get into a little bit what this means and what a 4-year ban for a distance runner means when that distance runner is 28 and this is the prime of her career.
Yeah, that's rough. And, you know, like, I'm not a scientist either, so I don't know, like, if that's true. Like, I don't know if her reasoning is true or realistic or whatever. My baseline is to, like, for the most part, assume that people who devote their lives to something like this, you know, and work so hard for this one goal or, you know, whatever they have going on, aren't going to be doing things that are banned or that are legal. Like, that's my baseline, and maybe that's totally naive. So of course I totally want to believe that her, you know, reasoning is true, because it's just horrible. I mean, that's your whole life that they've worked for this and the sacrifices that they've made, et cetera. So I can't believe it. I really can't speak to, like, the accuracy of it, but, or even how it works, but I think you have a note here, like, you know, was there additional testing done? I don't think there was. Why wasn't that offered?
Apparently she took a polygraph and she sent in a hair sample, and my understanding, and again, I don't know all of these facts, my understanding is she did those herself. So she opted into those. But no, it's bananas to me that they didn't retest. And the way she cites it, like, this was a freak thing. So I looked up, there's an NPR article that we'll link to in the show notes, but the substance is called nandrolene. And to hear, again, her story, she said that no one on her team, her coaches, she didn't know what the substance even was. And apparently it is used in animal production. Once again, she's from Iowa. The burrito that she ate was a pork burrito. And apparently this is a common thing in animal production, especially pork. There's a lot of pork in Iowa, is the point I'm trying to make. Being married to an Iowan, this is a thing I've learned. Anywho, but yes, I know. I agree with your point that it's just bananas that, you know, and in this year in particular, with Tokyo being moved and this kind of standard 4-year ban that is supposed to coincide with the Olympic cycle, like, now she's missing 2 Olympics.
Like, I want to know if this is, like, a thing. Like, if you eat pork and it has it in it, would you test positive for that? Because if that's the case, then, like, WTF, you know?
I mean, it's sort of the same thing. It's like, do poppy seeds make you test positive for a drug test? Like, is this just, like, an old wives' tale kind of thing? Like, I certainly can't say, but it feels like at a minimum she deserves another test.
Right. I think I saw, like, a fact or fiction on the poppy seed thing, and I'm pretty sure it was true. Like, it's not that it happens all the time, but it's totally possible.
I mean, everyone's body's different, right? So you don't know what, you know, things are going to happen. But at the same time, like, given that this is a thing that we don't, like, obviously neither you or I have a medical degree or our researchers in this area. But it feels like, since we can't get a firm answer from our hour of perusing the internet, maybe she should at least get another test.
You know, a simple Google search seems that this anabolic steroid called nandrolene is found in pork, but whether or not that, you know, can show up at levels for, to show up in testing, yeah, that's rough. I will say, pork is, like, sometimes a no-go for me, because I did get, like, the norovirus and food poisoning at the same time from eating pork. So,
oh, my God.
I know. It was rough. I had to go to the hospital and everything. I was in there for, like, 3 days. So, yeah, that was all from eating pork. So I've tried to stay away from it, just because of, you know, if someone didn't cook it all the way through, then it's no bueno. So rough, absolutely rough.
Well, I'm just a vegetarian, so I avoid all of those things altogether.
That's great.
But anyway, more to come on this story, I'm sure. And we'll provide an update as there is one in our following shows. But moving on to some other Olympic stories, we've got Olympic basketball news. Yeah, I'm going to let you run with this because I know you've got some exciting news about it.
Yeah, so both the women's and men's Olympic teams are joining together for camps in Las Vegas in July. The women's team is coached by Philly legend Dawn Staley, who some of you might know is the head coach at South Carolina. While the men are led by Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs. We all know that the men have 3 straight gold medals, while the women are going for their 7th straight gold. And this is really exciting for me because USA women's basketball team will end up playing the WNBA All-Stars. There might be some crossover there, but they're going to have a game between USA basketball and the All-Stars of the WNBA because it's All-Star weekend the same time that USA basketball is in Vegas. So I'm excited about it. I was, Dawn Staley is a friend of mine, and we had a, you know, a brief Twitter exchange where I jokingly said, all right, Dawn, I'm on my way out to Vegas. And she said, let's go, friend, come on out, you know, bring your Invest in Women merch. So I think I'm going to try to head out to Vegas for at least some of either All-Star or USA Basketball's time there and see if I can get some fun inside access or, you know, even just a hangout or two.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous of your life. I'm just hanging out here in Chicago enjoying the lake all summer.
I mean,
but alas.
Sounds great to me. No, it's really exciting. I mean, this is, USA basketball has just been dominant over the years. I mean, I don't know that there's another sport where, you know, Team USA is just the standard like they are in men's and women's basketball. So the other countries are catching up, you know, Australia, Canada, you've got some other teams and other countries that are going to be coming in hot to this Olympic Games. So it's exciting. And I'm just ready to see how, you know, who makes the team, you know, how they all mesh together. It's going to be, you know, we've got Sue Bird, Dan Taurasi, some legends still playing. You know, yeah. You can't imagine that they would be left off the Olympic team. This would be, I think, Sue's maybe 5th Olympics. I could be wrong there, but that's a lot of Olympics.
Absolutely wild. And like you said, having these legends come together and literally competing across the board for their spot on the roster. Like, when was the last time that, you know, they truly had to do this? Like, these are WNBA superstars. It's so exciting.
I love it. It's going to be great. And just USA basketball and the camaraderie that the team has. I mean, they haven't been together like this in a while. Before COVID happened, USA basketball and the WNBA actually, you know, struck a deal where I think it was 11 or 12 players would be selected that would be potential, you know, USA basketball members, and USA basketball would supplement their salaries so they didn't have to go play overseas. And the goal was that, you know, a lot of WNBA players have to go play overseas because they make more money over there, or that it allows them to make enough money to live year round. But also that's a wear and tear on their body because then they're playing basketball from the end of one season right into the beginning of the next one overseas. It's basically year round. So in order to prevent that, they struck up this partnership where they, you know, would basically supplement salaries, and then they started doing tours, which is where we would see USA basketball go play college teams like the University of Oregon. And I don't know if you remember that from a few years back, and Oregon actually beat USA basketball. It was a big deal when Sabrina Ionescu was still playing at Oregon. But it was great for the game. It was great for the sport. So yeah, you haven't really seen these players play that much together, you know, since COVID in this way. They're all stars, but you know, it's getting them all together and getting them to perform at that high level. So it's going to be fun to watch. And obviously Dawn Staley is a legend, a GOAT. You know, she's great coach too. So she's going to have everyone in shape.
That's what we've got for today. Before we wrap up the show, Kelsey, shall we do our shout out?
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, pull a KD here and just shout out to my mom, the real MVP. It's been a long week, month, year. So she always holds it down. So shout out to mom.
Nice. I'm going to shout out my friend Haley. Now that we are vaccinated and the world is reopening and we are able to travel and see one another, I get to see one of my very best friends last weekend, and it fills the emotional void that has been growing in the last year, Kelsey, to be frank.
I love that for you.
All right. On that note, that's all we've got for today. As a reminder, you can follow Kelsey on Twitter at @ktrain_11, me at @MeredithHein, and the site at @LandGrant33. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening to Play Like a Girl, and as always, go Bucks.